watched this program on BBC, The Repair Shop. Yeah. Tracy's smiling because she knows I've only seen about a 5-minute clip and I'm going to speak with expertise. But my understanding is this, that people bring their heirlooms and their loved items and they tell the story. They tell the story about Auntie Kathy, or they tell the story about the great granddad who had this rocking horse or this teddy bear, and it's now dog-eared and dishevelled. And the experts get together and they determine how they can repair it. And a few weeks later, the person who owns this object returns and there's this grand unveiling and inevitably tears. Now, I am certainly not minimising the skill of these restorers. But what I want to suggest is it's okay to repair rocking horses and teddy bears, but only our God can really restore broken people. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to conclude our look at John's Gospel. If you remember, we are looking, learning to delight in Jesus through this Gospel. And in John chapter 20, we read this. The disciples saw Jesus do many other miraculous signs, in addition to the ones recorded in this book. But these are written so that you might continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name. Now that seems to me, and probably to you, to be a summary, doesn't it? And yet what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at chapter 21. And sometimes I wonder why it is that John seems to summarize his gospel, and then we have what is really a postscript or an addition or an addendum. And I want to suggest that God, by his grace, doesn't want to keep us hanging. God, by his grace, wants us to know what happened to Simon Peter. And so what I want to do is read to you chapter 21. But before we get there, I just want to remind you a little bit about Peter. Peter, you might remember, is a fisherman. But I reckon that Peter would have got really, really bored if he was idling his time on the banks of the River Thames. When we first meet Peter, he was a fisherman who ran a business with his brother Andrew. And although Galilee is a fairly small inland lake, because of the lay of the land, we know that storms would just come up very, very quickly. And so what Peter was doing was perilous. The first time he met Jesus, he was going about his everyday business, and his everyday business was mending his nets in order that he could catch enough fish to sell in a market, to earn enough money to feed his family and pay taxes to the Romans. Not much changes, does it? But actually, what we find is that Peter was called by Jesus, called away from obscurity, away from security, away from everything he knew in order to follow him. And so John tells us the story of Jesus, and interwoven with the story of Jesus is the story of Simon Peter. He was there in John chapter 2 when Jesus performed his first miracle, turning water into wine. We find that Simon Peter was there when Jesus taught the masses and healed the sick and drove out demons. There was one occasion when one of these storms did blow up, and we find that the disciples were fearful in a boat. Why? Because not only was there a storm, but Jesus walked towards them. And it was Simon Peter who Jesus called out of the boat. And we often laugh at Simon Peter because he didn't walk on water for very long because he took his eyes off Jesus. But rather than laughing at him, I want to commend him because he was the one who was willing to get his feet wet. And I know that this is Matthew's gospel, not John's, but I think it's significant. There was a time at Caesarea Philippi, that's the source of the Jordan River, where Jesus stood, and there's carvings in the cliffs of these Greek and Roman gods. And so Jesus asked the question, who do people say that I am? And the disciples started to reel off lots of popular answers, John the Baptist or Jeremiah or one of the other prophets. But of course, Jesus wanted to say, what about you? Who do you say I am? And it was Simon Peter who said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus blessed him and said, this was not revealed by man, but by my Father in heaven. I read only 2 weeks ago, a guy called Simon Ollerton said that archaeologists would reveal that 2,000 years ago, the most popular boy's name in Israel was Simon. And so in the Bible, we have Simon the Tanner, designated because of his job. Simon from Cyrene, designated because of his job. And so Jesus uses this opportunity to say, you're not just any Simon, I'm going to call you Rocky. That's going to be your nickname, Simon Peter. And upon this rock, that's what Peter means, upon this firm foundation, I will build my church. And of course, Ephesians says that it's on the foundation of prophets and apostles that Jesus does build his church, but I want to suggest that he's still building his church now on the basis of those who confess the Lordship of Jesus, because it's revealed to them by his Spirit. And so let's come back to John's Gospel. John tells us on the night that Jesus is betrayed, he's with his disciples in an upper room. And the meal has been cooked and the wine has been poured. But there's no servant, apparently, who's present to wash the disciples' feet. Now, as a kid, I was told to wash my hands before a meal. I was never told to wash my feet. But I guess that was okay because they were hidden under the table. But 2,000 years ago, where people didn't sat but they reclined, it was a problem. Because my right toe would be about 3 inches from your left nostril. But there was no servant. And I guess the disciples were looking at one another. Who's going to take this lowly place? But none were willing, although all were able. And John tells us that it was Jesus, the Lord of glory, who stood up and took off his robe and took a towel and wrapped it around his waist, and he took a bowl and he washed the feet of John and Bartholomew. And he washed the feet of Thomas and Judas, who would betray him. And it came to Simon Peter, and I understand Simon Peter. He said, no, Lord, no, you cannot wash my feet. And Jesus said, unless I can wash your feet, then you can have no part of me. And he said, not just my feet, but wash my head and my hands also. It's an amazing event. But Jesus said on the back of it that one of you will betray me. And Simon Peter said, all these lads might, but I won't. If each one turns their back, then I never will. Now, when we were looking through John's Gospel, I intentionally missed this passage out. That was a couple of months ago because I wanted to revisit this morning. And I'm going to read you this passage. It's a passage after Jesus was arrested. Simon Peter followed Jesus, as did another of the disciples. That other disciple was acquainted with the high priest, so he was allowed to enter the high priest's courtyard with Jesus. Peter had to stay outside the gate. Then the disciple, who knew the high priest, spoke to the woman watching at the gate, and she let Peter in. The woman asked Peter, you're not one of that man's disciples, are you? No, he said, I'm not. Because it was cold, the household servants and the guards had made a charcoal fire. They stood around it, warming themselves, and Peter stood with them, warming himself. Inside, the high priest began asking Jesus about his followers and what he had been teaching. Jesus replied, "Everyone knows what I teach. I've preached regularly in the synagogues and the temple, where the people gather. I've not spoken in secret. Why are you asking me these questions? Ask those who heard me. They know what I said." Then one of the temple guards standing nearby slapped Jesus across the face. "Is that the way to answer the high priest?" he demanded. Jesus replied, "If I said anything wrong, you must prove it. But I'm speaking the truth. So why are you beating me?" Then Annas bound Jesus and sent him to Caiaphas, the high priest. Meanwhile, as Simon Peter was still standing by the fire warming himself, they asked him again, "Why? Are you not one of the disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "No, I'm not." But one of the household slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Didn't I see you out there in the olive grove with Jesus?" Again, Peter denied it. And immediately, a rooster crowed. When I was a teenager, I used to go to Man City every home game and occasionally away. When I say occasionally, I went away as much as my pocket money would allow. And there was one particular game I remember vividly. I got tickets for the derby at Old Trafford. That's behind enemy lines, as we like to call it in Manchester. And I remember going out with my mate that morning with my blue and white scarf on. But when I got to the ground, we realised that our tickets were not in the away end. They were in the home end. And I'd been so bold and I'd been so confident. And he looked at me and I looked at him and we took off our scarves and we tied them around our waist and we zipped up our coats as high as they would go. I didn't want to deny my football team, but I was fearful of getting my head kicked in. And so for the sake of discretion, we decided to go incognito. Now, the other gospels, they repeat what happened here to Peter. And they suggest that he didn't just take off his scarf and wrap it around his waist and zip up his jacket. He wasn't discreet. But when this servant girl said, "Were you with him?" "You were with him. I did see you, not once, not twice, but three times." What he started to do was use pretty industrial language. He started to curse himself. "I wasn't effing jeffing with the man. I don't know him. I'm one of you. I'm not one of them." And Luke tells us that when the rooster crowed, he wept. And he wept bitterly. And I wonder why. I wonder why he didn't have the confidence. Now, I might be wrong, but I would suggest he knew what was going to happen. He knew the horrors of crucifixion. He knew the horror of suffering. And just because Jesus was about to suffer, however willing or eager he was to affirm his loyalty, when push came to shove, he didn't have the confidence nor the ability to see it through. And I wonder if some of that was to do with pride. Nearly 35 years ago, Tracy and I stood in a church like this, and I told my wife then that I would love her and honour and cherish her. And there's probably not been a week where I've not had to say, "I'm sorry. I've blown it. I've failed." And actually, we need to learn how to apologize to one another and to God for our wrong. We need to practice repentance in our lives. And what we find here is a man who was proud, a man who was impetuous. When Jesus was arrested, he took his sword and he sliced off the high priest's servant's ear. Jesus, in grace, healed the man and covered up his impetuosity, covered up his stupidity. But I also realise, when I wonder why it was that he denied our Lord, his prayerlessness. Because Jesus had said, when I'm in Gethsemane, just sit with me, stand with me, pray with me. And when Jesus returned, he and James and John were sleeping. And we need to be people who are prayerful. We need to be people who practice repentance. We need to be people who deal with those intrinsically sinful character traits that we carry. But I wonder this morning, how many of you, how many of us can identify with Simon Peter? When was the last time you denied Jesus? And I'm not talking about using the industrial language. I'm talking about taking the scarf from around your neck, tying it around your waist, and zipping up your jacket. Not to reveal who you are, but to conceal the truth. I wonder when the last time was that you denied Jesus. Not simply by the things that you did say or you did do, but sometimes by the things that you didn't say or the things that you didn't do. If you're like me, I would think that you deny Jesus more often than you'd like to admit. And it's important that we acknowledge that. Quill was speaking earlier about the way to God. To recognise our struggle, to recognise our sin isn't the obstacle, it's the way into his presence. And so we find, as we come to John chapter 21, the disciples hankered down into Jerusalem. Jesus has not only been arrested, but now Jesus has been crucified. And they're living in the light of it. They're living with the trauma. They're looking at one another. They know their weakness. They know their frailty. They know that everything that they had left, what was known for the unknown for, has now gone. And yet you remember on Sunday morning, the women returned and said, we've been to the tomb, we've been to the grave. And it was John the author and Simon Peter who went. And John tells us that they entered the tomb and they saw and they believed. And so this is what I want to focus on this morning. I don't want to address it for long, but the fire of restoration. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples by the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there. Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellas, have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat. You'll get some. So they did. And they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple who loved Jesus, that's John, said to Peter, it is the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he'd stripped for work. He jumped into the water and he headed for the shore. The others stayed with the boats and pulled the loaded net to shore, for they were only about 100 yards from the shore. And when they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire. I just want you to picture the scene. The risen Jesus is doing what Jesus does. The one who washed their feet has cooked them breakfast. He's the same yesterday, today and forever. Isn't that beautiful? He's still serving. And Simon Peter, still impetuous, he was the first there. But I just wonder, just the shock, just the horror, just the trauma, as he realised where Jesus was standing. He was standing by a fire. Just think of the memories. The last time he stood by a fire, he was warming his hands. And he was denying the one who's now serving him. I wonder what that triggered. We read on, "Bring some of the fish you've just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Come on, have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. And then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied. "You know that I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said. "You know I love you." "Take care of my sheep," Jesus said. A third time he asked, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was hurt that Jesus asked him a question the third time. "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." Just want to highlight three things. The first thing is this. Do you notice what Jesus calls him? Didn't call him Peter. Didn't call him the rock. Called him by the name that he first knew him. Called him Simon. I bet that hurt. Because it was realised, it was recognised. Peter wasn't dependable. He had heard, that's what Simon means, but he wasn't yet dependable. And I just want to say that many of us should be able to identify with that, that God has done a work in our life, but his work of grace is not yet finished. Second, have you noticed what Jesus asked him? He said, "Do you love me?" And there are different Greek words for love. And on the first two occasions, he said, "Do you agape me? Do you have unconditional, godly love for me?" And on both occasions, Peter said, "Yes." But on the third occasion, Jesus asked a different question. He said, "Do you even have friendship towards me?" No wonder Peter was hurt. And yet the beautiful thing, the glorious thing, despite this man's weakness and sin, Jesus commissions him. And there's this beautiful interplay here about feeding and tending and about lambs and sheep. Because Peter's fall must have affected all of the followers of Jesus. And yet Jesus is saying that you've still in me got a purpose, and that's to care, and that's to shepherd, and that's to feed those who are young and those who are old. In the Old Testament, God refers to himself as the shepherd of Israel. We find Jesus in John 10 says, "I'm the good shepherd." And so Jesus, having said that he would ascend into heaven, is saying, "Peter, I've still got a plan. We're still going to work together. We're still going to cooperate and collaborate because I want you to feed and care and tend for those which I love." His work wasn't finished. There's one more fire that I just want to refer to briefly. And that's on the day of Pentecost. And on the day of Pentecost, we find that the disciples are gathered, maybe in the same upper room as the Last Supper. And the Spirit came. What seemed to be tongues of fire came and separated upon each of them. And they spilled out from the upper room into the streets. And people ask the question, what does this mean? And I know this is a bit precarious, but it says in Acts 2 this, that Peter stood up amongst them. Peter stood up amongst them. I think that's miraculous. I wonder what the servant girl thought. I wonder if she was in the crowd when Peter stood up. Because if she was, then she saw the answer before she heard it. What does this mean? It means that there's a man who's transformed by the power of God. It means that one who was weak is now strong. One who heard a Simon is now Peter the Rock, because God is performing his plans and his purpose. I wonder if the high priest's servant was there in the crowd, still making sure his ear was attached. Because if so, before he heard the answer, he saw the answer. The grace of God poured out. And so what was it that Peter received? The promise that Jesus had given them. What was it that he had received? The person of the Spirit of Christ who was now living and dwelling. What was it that he had received? He'd received power to be different, power to be transformed. You know, John concludes the gospel again in chapter 21. John tells us Jesus also did many other things. And if they were all written down, I suppose the whole world would not contain the books that would be written. And dare I say, I want to rephrase that. Jesus did not only do many things, but Jesus is still doing many things. He's still restoring the broken. He's still healing the hurting. He still takes Simon and makes them Peter. I was in a church only 2 months ago and I sat with a lady. She was on this side and I was here. And I asked the question, I said, how long have you been in this church? I think it's a good question to ask. How long have you been in this church? And she said, I've been here for 2 months. I said, that's great. What has God done in your life in 2 months? She said, I've put on 2 stone. So I asked a pertinent question. I said, why is that good news? And she said, it's good news because I was a prostitute on the streets. I've had my children removed. But God had made himself known. And it was Mother's Day, and the beautiful thing is the church were giving out flowers to the mothers. And they gave this lady a bunch of flowers. Isn't that precious? Transformed, healed, renewed, restored. Our God is still in the business of putting together broken people. And I want to encourage you, picking up on what Quill shared, to come to God even today in your brokenness. To be honest about your struggle, your prayerlessness, your impetuosity, your pride. And allow God to renew you. Allow God to restore you. Phil, I know we've got a closing song. I just want to make an invitation. If you identify with Simon Peter, if you identify with his impetuosity, with his pride, with his prayerlessness, if you know that you have taken off your scarf and wrapped it around your waist, and you want God to bring healing and wholeness, if you stand now, then people are going to gather around and we're going to pray that God would meet with us in our hour of need.